Hey, everybody, welcome into a special edition of Investing in Real Estate. We're calling this the election edition of Investing in Real Estate. I'm your host, Clayton Morris. Natalie Morris is here with me, and we brought back a very special guest, one of our most popular guests we've ever had here on the show. You might recognize Tom Wheelwright from episodes 19 and 22, one of the smartest tax accountants in the country, and the creator of ProVision Wealth. Of course, if you go to ProVision, you're going to learn all about how to hire one of the best accounting teams in the country, and I know many of our listeners have done that. Well, Tom is back on the show. We wanted to talk to Tom today about the election. What is the? How will the tax code change after this election, under Hillary Clinton or a Donald Trump presidency? So we're going to ask people to kind of leave their politics at the door today, I think. Whatever sort of political bias you have in your brain walking into this podcast, we're just going to talk about taxes, and we're going to break down the benefits of each. Tom, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, you guys. It's always great to be on your show. We absolutely love your listeners. They're fantastic.
Well, thanks so much. We know that many of our listeners work with ProVision as well, that's fantastic. And we've also got my little baby, Eve, is here joining us today. It's lunchtime, so you might hear the little chirps in the background.
I thought that was what you were referring to when you said we have our favorite guest.
Right. So, Natalie, you want to kind of kick this off a little bit?
Right. Okay. So, yes, when you were on the show last time, you had mentioned briefly that the two different tax plans of the two different candidates were vastly different. You had said that Donald Trump's plan is a lot like a carbon copy of Ronald Reagan's tax plan, and Hillary Clinton is a little bit more restrictive on investors. So, I don't know, which one do you think we should start with? And you can walk us through the differences.
Well, maybe we should back up a little bit and just talk about where these two candidates come from, very different places. So if you think of, let's start with Barack Obama, our current president, and where he comes from is he's always been an employee. So when he thinks about taxes, he thinks about it as an employee would. Okay, he's going to pay 30 to 40% taxes, and he's going to have very limited opportunities for tax benefits because he's an employee, and that's where he comes from. Hillary is an attorney. She comes from the self-employed realm. And so she's going to look at everything as a self-employed person would look at things. So she's going to have a very different perspective even than Barack Obama would have. But then Donald Trump has a completely different view than either Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton would have, because he's a big business owner and a professional investor. And that's just a very different point of view. I actually just got back from a tour in Eastern Europe and Asia, Kazakhstan and Russia and Ukraine. And it was actually fascinating as we were going through. We were actually pointing out these differences. Robert Kiyosaki and I were on tour, and we were pointing out these differences in where these people come from. So if you look at where they're coming from, it's going to be a little easier to understand where they might go with the tax law. So when you hear Hillary, she talks about, oh, we need to, we need to punish the big businesses. Well, she doesn't come from big business, so of course that would be her mentality. She wants to benefit the small investor. That's where she comes from. Her tax plan is really more of the same. There's not a lot of changes in her tax plan. I mean, she's going to tweak the tax law. But I don't think we're going to see any major changes in the tax law under Hillary Clinton. Just like we didn't see anything major under Bill Clinton. Actually, some of the best tax provisions we have in the law right now actually came under Bill Clinton's term as president. The exclusion of housing, for example, the professional real estate investor, those both came under Bill Clinton's term of office. So, and I think those are two of the really good tax legislation we have.
Sorry, I interrupted you. What about capital gains? Because she had mentioned she wants to extend capital gains, right, or lengthen the time.
She does. I mean, that was really the only substantive suggestion she's made throughout the campaign, is to lengthen the period of time. In order to get the best rate, you'd have to hold something for 6 years. I think for a typical, for example, real estate investor, I'm not sure that that's a you know, gonna hurt anybody, because most of our real estate investors, of course, we're looking at a 1031 exchange. So who cares, right? I mean, it doesn't matter, because what happens in a 1031 exchange, for example, is that holding period tacks on. So you could do, for example, let's say you buy a piece of real estate today, you hold it for 2 years, and then you say, I'm ready to sell this piece of real estate. I'm going to buy a different piece of real estate. Well, now you do a 1031 exchange or a like-kind exchange, which means you're not going to pay tax. Well, the next property, let's say you hold that for 3 years. Well, now, but that property, you're considered after 3 years to have held it for 5 years because that holding period tax on. Then let's say that you sell that second one and you buy a third one in a 1031 exchange. You hold that for 2 years. Now you're beyond the six years. So, you know, presumably that mechanism would stay the same. So I'm not sure that, yes, she extends the holding period. I think it has a bigger effect on stock investors, though, than it would on real estate investors.
So when you look, if we sort of step back a little bit for this tax code, we always sort of presume that presidents have an enormous amount of power when it comes to altering the tax code. And as a student of history, I know that that's not necessarily true. You really need Congress on board here. So how likely is it to see any of these big shifts in the tax code under a presidential swing anyway?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, like I said, Mrs. Clinton is not likely to make big changes anyway. And I think that she actually would be pretty good at working with a Republican Congress. Certainly Bill was very good at working with Republican Congress. And I don't see the same deadlock that we've had over the last several years. I think Hillary would actually be much easier to work with. So I think you're more likely to see some changes under her than you might have under Barack Obama. But if you look at the tax changes in Obama's term of office, they've been pretty significant. I mean, we've got a 179 deduction that's been permanent. We've got a higher estate tax exclusion. And so things like that. Now, Hillary wants to reduce the estate tax exclusion, which I think is unlikely with the Republican Congress. I think she's going to have a tough time unless there's some horse trading going on. Now, Trump's a different matter because – you know, there's actually a possibility right now that we could even see a Republican Senate and a Republican House along with a Republican president. I mean, if you had those three combined, now, like you said, you know, that if Trump and Congress can get on the same page, that's when you're going to see the potential for a major change. And there is some appetite, I think, in Congress right now for some changes, though they would have to be changes that pretty much benefit everybody because, you know, we saw a few years ago there were proposals by the chairman of the House Ways and Means, Dave Camp, that just died on the vine. They were good proposals, but, you know, there's always, you know, everybody has their own special interest. If you're a professional investor, you have an interest in maintaining your tax benefits. If you're a homeowner, you have an interest in maintaining your tax benefits. If you're an insurance company, you have an interest in maintaining your tax benefits. So it's always challenging to get major legislation through, and what you have to have, like, that's the reason the last major legislation we've had really was Ronald Reagan, 1986, and the last major change to the tax law. And what he had was he had, you know, he had Republican Congress, and he had, you know, he was able to work with them, and they decided, yes, we have the appetite for this, and we're gonna take it forward. But that's what it had to have. I mean, he had to have, you know, you really have to have everybody on the same page, as you say.
But what is the appetite for change? What kind of things do Republicans seem to want?
Well, you know, you hear a lot about flat tax. You hear a lot about simplification. You hear about you hear about rate reduction, and Trump's plan actually would do all of those. You know, if he were to bring, let's say, because right now his proposal is to bring the tax rate for businesses down to 15%. If he were to do that, what you'd actually create is a tax haven in the United States. Okay, right now we have the highest corporate tax rate in the world. Okay, if you went to a 15%, we'd actually have one of the lowest corporate tax rates in the world. So if you went to that, you'd actually have, I believe you'd have companies from Europe and Asia that would be moving to the U.S. in order to take advantage of the U.S. tax laws. Now, could he get that low of a rate? I don't know. But even if he went to a 25%, he would have a major impact, I think, positive impact on business. What he also wants to do is he wants to give an amnesty to allow companies like Apple and Google to bring money back into the U.S. Well, that would also have an impact. Now, also keep in mind that once you get down to a 25% tax rate, people don't look at taxes as having an impact. I mean, you know, our first goal with any client is to get you to a 25% rate. Once we get to a 25% rate, anything we do above that is really gravy, you know, because you don't want to do something just, you know, with tax as a primary motivator. If you're in the 25% bracket, it's just not worth it. So once you get your taxes down for that low, then all of these special interests, they stop having quite as big an impact. And that's something that did happen under Ronald Reagan, because he brought that down to a 25% rate, maximum rate. And that did have an impact on people because they stopped paying attention, at least until it went back up. They stopped paying attention so much to taxes.
Hmm. Are there undesirable outcomes of Reagan's tax plan that we seem to have forgotten?
Well, you mean like the SNL crisis?
Right.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that obviously, you know, we had the RTC and the entire real estate crash of 1989, 1990, 1991 was a direct result of Reagan's plan. And the reason was because Reagan insisted on being revenue neutral, which means that there had to be enough revenue raised in order to offset the revenue that was lost. Neither Trump nor Clinton or any president since Reagan has seemed to have that feel that desire or need to actually have the budget balance with their tax act. But there always are unintended consequences. So for example, if you take let's take Trump's reduction in tax rates, well, now people don't have the incentive to put money into real estate, to oil and gas, because they don't have the big tax rate. So I think you're definitely going to see you see some general economic benefit, but you also see some industries that will absolutely, I think, be hurt by a lower tax rate. I mean, I know that sounds odd, but I do think that, like you say, Natalie, you do have unintended consequences, because right now the tax law is very much a system of incentives, and while those incentives may or may not change, the fact of having a lower tax rate, by definition, changes how much people care about those incentives.
Hmm. What about preparation? Obviously, we're looking at these different potential presidents in the next few days here. Where do we need to be? How do we protect ourselves? How do we prepare ourselves for what can come then in January once that new president takes office, if we are a real estate investor?
Well, I think what you do, of course, is you look, first of all, you look at their two proposals. And if you want to go to taxfoundation.org, I think that's a good place to start. Tax Foundation is a really good nonprofit that does a good job of comparing the different proposals that are out there, and or, you know, someplace else, you know, any reputable site on the internet that is a think tank, you know, would have those proposals. And you look at them, you go, okay, so here's Hillary's proposals, here's Donald's proposals. And then you also have to look at what has Congress proposed, because, you know, it's we're not just electing a new president, we're electing a new Congress, we're electing a new Senate. And I think what you do is what I would do is I'd get educated. So I'd be looking at these different proposals that are out there, see who's in office. I mean, assuming the Republicans maintain the House, but if the Republicans maintain everything, then I think you have to look at, okay, so we have a possibility here for, you know, a Trump tax plan. All right, well, let's prepare for that. For example, if I were in real estate, let's say that I were flipping houses in real estate, I'd want to make sure that I were set up as a business, okay? Because it's the business tax rate that Trump's proposing to reduce, not the personal tax rate. So the business tax rate he's proposing to reduce to 15%, but the personal tax rate stays at 35%. So I'd want to make sure, for example, I'd start looking at, okay, well, then I want to make sure I'm in business. If Hillary's tax plan, I'm going to be looking at, okay, are there assets that I want to sell that I don't, let's say that I don't want to do a 1031 exchange for whatever reason, I want to capture that lower tax rate, you know, then you look at, well, you know, do I do that earlier rather than later? I mean, I don't think you have to do it before January, but, you know, I'd certainly, you know, the challenge Hillary has, of course, is that her first 100 days are going to be full of controversy because of the FBI investigation. So the chances of her getting anything done in that first 100 days, the way Obama got all sorts of, you know, legislation done, like the, you know, the ACA passed in that first 100 days, is really unlikely with her. So I don't think there's as big I don't think there's a big rush here, but I think it is a matter, and this is why I love your show, is because you're all about getting people educated and pointing the right direction, and getting educated is what needs to happen. Now, you know, you also have to look at what's going to happen in the market, because no matter who gets elected, the market always reacts, right? And you can't ignore, just because you're in the real estate market doesn't mean you can ignore the stock market, because if the stock market crashes, the real estate market will take a hit. So I think we also have to look at that.
Right. And really being locking in an understanding where you can create the most value in those, maybe some of those blue collar, hardworking towns where you're not likely to see that job shift that you would see in some of the higher earning A neighborhoods that we sort of talk about here on the show.
And we also see there's some tax credits that have been extended for green initiatives like solar panels,
right,
and that kind of thing. Do you think either one of those candidates will do the same thing?
Oh, there's always going to be initiatives like that. In fact, I think we're going to see more and more of that. I mean, you know, one of the things that I noticed when I was in Asia and Eastern Europe, you know, the oil prices have had a huge, huge impact on their economies. I mean, it has a huge impact on the price of their currency. Every one of the currencies, Russia, Ukraine, Kazakhstan, and Kyrgyzstan, their currencies, you can actually see they dropped in half against the dollar when oil prices dropped, in half. Okay, so that means that their imports doubled in price the day that, basically almost the day that we got higher oil, lower oil prices. And so you have to look at those things and pay attention to what's going on in the world, I think, not just what's going on in the country. And you do have to look at, okay, what's going to happen in the market, what's going to happen in the individual markets, but also what's going to happen in the global market.
When you look at when your sort of world travels that you saw, and I know you were taking it all in, you were in South Africa, New Zealand, one of my favorite countries, but you were seeing a lot of incentivizing there. How do you think that we could learn in the United States from some of that pro-growth strategy?
You know, like I always say, the tax law is the best. You will want to understand what a country's policies are. Look at the tax law, and you'll see what their policies are. So, you know, if you see a lot of green initiatives, you're going to see that's from a tax standpoint, then that's what their policy is. They want green. If you look at, like, for example, you know, where I was just now, you know, what you have is you have a lot of incentives for oil and mining and agriculture, because that's what's important to them. Okay. So in the U.S., you have to look at, okay, what's important? And, you know, what's important to one person is different than what's important to another. So that's why you look at our policymakers and you say, okay, what's important to them? And that's where the tax incentives are going to come. But I don't think there's any question that energy will always, 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 energy, business, real estate, you know, like housing, commercial real estate, those are things that will always bring incentives with them. And then it's just a matter of looking for, okay, what are those incentives and how do we take advantage of them?
And, you know, when you talk about real estate investing, I mean, one of the things that you've said on our show before is that if you're a serious real estate investor and you're paying taxes, then you've got the wrong tax advisor. And you've said it's that simple, right? I mean, it's not difficult in real estate, and that's one of the great benefits of real estate is the tax benefits that in every country. Now, if you're seriously investing in real estate and you're paying taxes and you're doing something wrong, right? So you don't see that shifting much in this right. Through the election.
No. I don't. I don't think it'll shift no matter who's in office. I don't think that's going to shift. Even Obama, you know, he wanted to get out of some of the oil incentives, but he never even really talked about much in the real estate incentives. There's a few. Both Clinton and Trump have talked about getting rid of the carried interest rule, which for a developer is a big deal. Okay, but for you know, your smaller real estate investor, is not going to have an impact. But you're exactly right. I mean, because of debt and depreciation, the combination of debt and depreciation, if you're using those wisely, And you're, of course, we still want cash flow from our real estate. But if we can use debt and depreciation properly, then, you know, as we build that portfolio, what'll happen is the more money we make and the greater our net worth becomes, the lower our taxes will go. So it's really an inverse relationship in growth in real estate portfolio and taxes. Your taxes go down as your net worth goes up.
One of the things I'm worried about under this sort of, if Donald Trump brings back this Reagan plan, is, you know, a lot of the investors that purchase properties through us are doctors. They're super busy. We've got neurosurgeons that buy property. They're too busy to worry about real estate, but they want the passive income. Lawyers that are too busy, you know, they want great passive income. What happened in 1986 when you have doctors and lawyers who were investing in real estate back then, and then suddenly under the Reagan tax plan, you just lost those incentives. Can you explain a little bit about that and how that could be a harbinger?
Well, sure. I mean, this was part of Reagan. Reagan wanted the tax bill to be revenue neutral, meaning that winners had to offset losers. When it came to, you know, revenue raised there had to be enough revenue raised to offset the revenue lost. So when you look at a flattening of the tax rates, you have revenue lost by definition. You go from a 40% tax rate to a 25%, even a 35%, you know, or 25% tax rate. Certainly for doctors, lawyers, any small business owner, you're looking at a tax rate going from 40%, or actually 43% potentially, down to 15% because you're a business owner. So that's a huge decrease in overall taxes. Well, so from that standpoint, if that part gets, you know, if that part goes, is in there, then I don't think the doctors and lawyers are going to care too much if they're only paying 15% in tax. But as far as the real estate investors, you're right. I mean, will the doctors and lawyers want to invest in real estate? Well, you know, you're going to have to go back to, let's get out of the tax. Let's not worry about the tax rules, and let's worry about the financials, which is, I think, is a better approach anyway. But what happened in 86, of course, was that the 86 Tax Act was dead. It was dead in the water. I actually was back in Washington. I was in the National Tax Office for what is currently Ernst & Young. And Senator Packwood was the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, and he was trying to come up with a way, he and his associates were trying to come up with a way to pay for the 86 Act. And the solution they came up with was, well, look, let's not allow casual real estate investors. In fact, actually, at that point, it was no real estate investors. Let's not allow real estate losses to offset other income. Let's make sure that passive losses, those losses from a passive investment, can only offset income from a passive investment. So you can no longer can offset ordinary income. And of course, what that did was cause the S&L crisis. And the reason being that at that time, there were a lot of projects that were staged pay-ins. So in other words, a doctor was invested in a private offering and he had to pay, say, $100,000 a year for 5 years, and he's in the middle of it. And then all of a sudden the tax benefits go away and he goes, well, I don't want to pay this. And so what happened was is that everybody stopped paying. Well, then the developer said, well, if I don't have my interest being paid, if I'm not making my debt service, I can't deal with that. So the property went back to the savings and loans, and the savings and loans go, well, I can't handle it. And so they end up going out of business. Next thing we know, we have the real estate trust corporation. So, you know, the RTC, and we have, you know, acreage that's going for 50 cents on the dollar. 50 cents an acre. So, That you know, you're going to have those potential consequences. Anytime you have a major tax change, I mean, the thing to look at is, okay, what else could happen? I mean, just right. Like you said, Natalie, what else could happen here? And that's the thing to pay attention to. And you could have those. I mean, you're going to have, in order to pay for it, you're going to have to, you know, all Trump says is, well, we're going to eliminate, you know, loopholes. What he really means is we're going to eliminate incentives, because there aren't enough loopholes to make, you know, you could call the carried interest a loophole, but there really aren't enough loopholes to make a dent. So you have to eliminate legitimate incentives that were intended. And that's a major shift in policy. I mean, you have to look at that. If you eliminate tax benefits for real estate, for example, that would be a huge shift in policy. Hmm. It really would.
Fascinating. Well, I know we've got to get you out of here. You're a busy man here, pre-election time here. And Natalie, any final questions? Any final thoughts?
No, I mean, I guess my sort of ignorant high-level question is if these things change, will there just be a new thought process that, you know, if we have prudent accountants and wealth planners, that we can sort of shift accordingly? Is that what the hope is if you're a investor?
I think a couple of things to really be clear on. First of all, we always invest for financial rewards first and taxes second. Okay, that's the first thing, and that won't change. Okay, in fact, if anything, that will probably change, be even more so once if your tax rates go down. So that's number one. Second of all, we recognize that the tax law is just a series of incentives, and that's what it is. We look at what the incentives are, we take advantage of them, and we're just looking for, okay, what are the new incentives? That's it, because there will always, always, always be incentives. The tax law has too big an impact. I believe that one of the reasons that Trump originally had proposed a top rate of 25%. Now he's gone back to 35%, which is the Republican Congress's proposal. I think the reason for that is because at 25%, nobody cares. So at 35%, now you've got incentives that matter to people. Okay, now the incentives still matter, and you can direct policy through the tax law. If you recognize that that's as long as we recognize that that's what the tax law is there for, that it's not just to raise revenue, but it is actually a way to direct policy. And then we just look at the policy, then it's a matter of, you're right, Natalie, it's a matter of, let's make sure we have a good team. Okay, we have good tax advisors, we have good financial advisors, we have good legal advisors, you know, we have good real estate advisors, we have good mentors and educators and coaches, and we have really good team. It's not a problem. You know, one of the things that Robert and I discussed a lot as we were traveling between countries was that you really have to change your context or your thought process first. If you don't change your thought process and how you look at things, like you say, Natalie, then the content and what's out there is meaningless. Absolutely meaningless. If you can't change the way you look at taxes, if you can't change the way you look at real estate investing, then it doesn't matter what's out there because you can't take advantage of it.
Okay. So that's, you need great. To be adaptable.
Yeah. For sure.
And working with a great team like the folks over at Provision Wealth, you can, we have links in our website. So this is episode 75. You just go over to morrisinvest.com/episode75. We'll have links to everything we've been talking about with Tom, including links right to Provision Wealth. You can check that out and go over there and start working with their team. They're fantastic. We know you're a busy man, pre-election stuff, and then post-election, you're going to be even busier. So as you try to sort through which tax code will be implemented or not. Tom, it's been great having you here on the show. As always, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Hey, thank you. It's always a pleasure to be with you guys. And I love what you're doing. Love the education that you're giving real estate investors. Just real estate investors can get caught in a trap if they're not prudent and they don't get the education. So congratulations on what you're doing. Thank you.
Oh, thanks, Tom. And thanks to all of you for downloading and subscribing. Go out there, vote, make a difference, and be a part of the democratic process. We'll see you back here on Wednesday post-election with another episode of Investing in Real Estate. Have a great one, everyone.